Hey, it's Chris. Welcome to the Between Dreams podcast. This show is a collection of conversations that I have with people who inspire me because they are out making amazing things happen in their life in hopes that you listen and maybe you get inspired to get out there and make something great happen with whatever you're doing. I talk to a lot of variety performers, jugglers, magicians, because that's my world. But I also love talking to everyone, no matter what, authors, travelers, adventurers, writers. Every single person has an amazing story and something to learn from them. And it's been so great for me simply to hear these stories. I hope you get even a piece of what I've been getting out of it, and it'll literally change your life. We're here to change lives. So thank you so much for listening in. Today's guest is really awesome. I knew him for several years back. I ended up doing an opening performance for him when he came to visit Penn State University, and I was just a student. And from the very beginning, he was so nice and just so positive and encouraging. And in a world of showbiz and entertainment where that's rare, and a lot of people aren't any of those things. They are often full of negativity and just people trying to sabotage other people. And that's not what it's about. And that's why I've always been inspired by him. He's Justin Willman. You've seen him on TV shows. You will see him soon on his Netflix series coming out soon. By the time you're hearing this, it's probably already out now, and on stages around the world as well. So we will get right into it in 1 minute. Before we do, I want to remind you that we also have additional exclusive bonus the conversation continues over on Patreon. So for just a couple bucks a month, you can become a supporter on Patreon, which will help bring this show to the next level. We're working on doing more versions of the show and improving the video. If you're just listening to this right now, we have video version as well on YouTube. I posted on my Facebook. We have the little mini 1 minute versions on Instagram. So we need a little bit of help to make sure all that stuff can continue happening. So if you want to hear more bonus content available only on Patreon, go over to patreon.com/betweendreams. Check it out. And if you want to see and hear more of these conversations about the cost of a cup of coffee per month, you'll get a new bonus episode every month. Of course, all the normal episodes are free. The first every guest has the main episode, which will always be free, and then the bonus content is over there on Patreon. So if you want to do that, go check it out. Of course, leave a rating, review wherever you're listening, tell a friend about the show. But for now, let's get into it. Here he is, Justin Willman.
Hi.
Hello.
This is pleasant.
Yeah.
I'm cozy. Hello. Hello.
You were just saying how my name is saved in your thing as Chris from Penn State, and
yeah,
that's because I met you when I was a student at Penn State University. You came as a performer to the school, and I was a student, and I was in the juggling club, and the Student Programming Association people wanted an opening act for you. So we were probably a very bootleg version of a juggling variety show to open for you.
In the Hub, right?
In the Hub.
In the Hub.
That's what it's called there. You've been to thousands of universities,
I have.
You knew that the Penn State one was called the Hub.
Penn State was always like one of the top-notch college visits because you knew, I mean, first off, it's a huge university, so you know that you're going to go into a proper space with hopefully good tech, and they'll be able to see you and hear you. But I think it was like orientation week. So I imagine it was mainly geared for freshmen who didn't have classes yet. Does that sound right?
Sure. Something
and,
like that.
And
yeah, it was at the beginning of this. It was at the beginning of the school year. That's right.
Yeah. And you guys were great. You guys were cool. Yeah, that was my life for a while. And then that became your life for a while, touring colleges.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was interesting. And I wanted to come into this in the first thing of, in that we were just like, we had a juggling club on campus, and we weren't like real performers yet. A lot of that crew is out performing now.
Doing it
for
real.
It's amazing. Like half of those people now are like real performers.
Well, that's a benefit of going to a school as big as Penn State, is in that it could actually have a juggling club.
Yeah.
And there was a magic club too. Like I went to Emerson College, really small school. I was the magic club. And there wasn't even a juggling club. Like, yeah. There was maybe, you know, you're lucky if you found one other magician who you could, like, jam with. So that's cool.
And the thing that resonates from that time was that I think you as a person really didn't have any reason to be overly nice to you. Some performers would have been like, these guys are going to, the audience is going to think that I brought them. You know, you didn't know what we were going to do or if we were going to be any good or anything like that. And I remember, like, before, you were super enthusiastic and encouraging, particularly. And you were like, yeah, this is awesome. Great job. You know, it was like, whatever, if that was authentic or not, it was just like being nice is really valuable. In that, just being encouraging to people who are younger, or not even younger, just being encouraging to others. And you've throughout, since I met you then, and then I started getting into the colleges, and then I remember seeing you at NACA, and you'd be like, "Hey, what's going on? How's it going? You did it! Like, across that bridge." Yeah. I was like, "Got a showcase at NACA," which at the time I was like, "Well, I did it! I'm successful now." Uh-huh. And then, and it was always a theme with seeing you out and interacting with you was always super positive and super nice and encouraging, when you didn't necessarily have, there's like a bunch of other performers that were in that same circle were like, went out of their way to be mean to me or try to sabotage me or something like. So the first question is why? Why do you, that's a decision that you had to make, of be nice or like be an asshole to younger or upcoming performers or just your fellow performers. And in a world, in a showbiz world of where there is this cutthroat competition, well, if I help that person be successful, there's gonna be less gigs for me. And that was never felt like a thing for you. If it was just like, oh, I encourage this, and there's been a couple other people. So why do you make that decision to be nice?
Interesting.
Instead of being mean?
Well, I mean, I guess two parts. One part is I like to think I'm a nice person, so being mean would take a lot of effort. Like, I'd have to try
to do that.
Yeah, like, you know, if I get cut off in the car, or if someone is like a blatant asshole to me, I'm like, well, they deserve for me to be mean to them, and or for me to tell them that the service is bad or something, and that like is a taxing thing on me. Like, it's not comfortable. Like, I only do it when I have to, and sometimes you have to, just because you need to stand up for yourself. But I think for a fellow entertainer and for a bunch of fellow entertainers, I feel like when I was in college, I had people who were really, really nice and supportive to me. So it's not just that I think being nice just is my default, but also I know how important support is. I know how also memorable your interactions with anybody is at that age, especially people who you might look up to just because they're a couple years ahead of you or doing the thing that you hope to be doing when you get out of college. And like, just their support, like, you'll never forget it. You'll also never forget if they're rude to you or if they're mean. Like, you would never forget that.
Yeah.
And I've had people who I remember, like I remember how nice Lance Burton and Matt King always were. And then I'll never forget when I was a kid, like, my one interaction with like Penn Jillette after one of their shows. Not that he was blatantly mean, but it was just kind of like really dismissive, like, you know, I don't have time for you, kid. And I never forgot that. Met Jay Leno at a book signing when I was a kid, and he was like really, really nice and listened to my dad talk about his 14-year-old magician son. And I never forgot like just how nice he was. So I feel like by default, I don't see anything bad that can come from being nice, and I don't see anything good that can come from being a dick. Unless you really want to crush someone's dreams and hopes that they won't end up being your competition. But
it's like your life is dedicated to that instead of just going and getting a gig somewhere.
Yeah, like, I just feel like good, you know, it's a better brand and a better life to just kind of spread positivity. I feel like, you know, spreading negativity just would eat you up inside. I don't have the stomach for it. But I think in terms of like the competition part, I like to think there's enough gigs for everybody. And you guys are, you know, jugglers, entertainers. So we're kind of like somewhat competitive, but also not really. Like, I think I feel like I'm equally supportive and positive to other young magicians, who many of whom now have gone from like being my, you know, mentee to now fellow competitors and, you know, like, and I, I will pay that price over just being negative to people. I will lose a gig as an adult to someone who I was supportive to versus the alternative.
Yeah. My good story from that is another person who was a college performer back then who came to Penn State was Norman Ng. He was a magician. Yeah. And he was the same thing, just so positive and supportive. We went to see his show and we were like, oh, yeah, we're jugglers and we're doing this stuff and we would love to do this. And I remember right when after I finished, I sent him a message. I was like, hey, man, I saw you come to the show. Like, I don't know if you remember us. We're like the juggling club or whatever. Like, we're trying to do this. We don't know really where to start. We know there's knack, you know, all these things. And long story short is he sent me like this huge email, and it wasn't like a copy and pasted
right.
I'm gonna send this to all the people
sat
that
down,
you know,
and
it was like all
this.
The thoughts that I addressed, he was like, okay, cool, so this and then this, and I was like, that was, it took him 10 minutes or something,
right.
20 minutes or an hour maybe to write that out, and it was the same thing. It resonated with me always. I was like, this guy is amazing, because he tried to help me, and it eventually then the whole thing of that was then eventually, like, he wanted to stay home more and he started an agency, and then he brought me on for a couple of years into his agency, which was booking me out. So he was, by being encouraging, he was making money
right.
off of me because he helped me become successful.
But a win-win, too.
Yeah,
you know?
And it was like most people, we're not going to start an agency or whatever, but like that process was very, I was like, oh, I'm willingly paying him money to help me book shows. And I trust him because I know he was like so nice to me. And so that was how I wanted to start the podcast.
I mean, and it's not just
I guess I'm saying thank you for on behalf of me. And I know you that's, as you said, that's your nature to be nice to people. Cause I've seen you in other shows and it's like always positive.
Yeah.
That's great.
Well, thanks. That's that makes me feel good. But I think it's also like you're not just like giving the gift of niceness. I feel like those rewards come back to you. I feel like because people never forget, even if it's not just other performers, but if it's just meeting some people after the show or they say hi or they want a photo, whatever, like people will never forget that one interaction with you. And if it's a lousy reaction, the great show will be like the secondary thing they remember.
Right.
We loved his show, but man, he was kind of rude at the Starbucks when we saw him the next day, you know? And just loyalty and repeat fans and more people coming to your shows, like the benefit of just being pleasant is tangible.
And I think there's that recurring, you and also you have this thing of like this kind of long-term goal, kind of in a way, of like just building this thing. And you have a bit of an evolution, as we all have an evolution in career-wise, of like starting off here and then seeing this new goal of like, so, like, I met you doing colleges, but before that, you were, as most variety and magic, you know, doing probably small birthday parties and you're like a little kid for your peers. Then you get to, like, colleges and whatever. It's, like, corporate things and then, like, more TV stuff. And you've kind of taken the whole spectrum of, like, going, like, evolving into, like, the next big thing. So somebody looks at you right now, and also now you have a Netflix special or Netflix series coming out.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot of people who are introduced to you for the first time.
Right.
Because of this new thing.
Right.
Throughout every step, there's like, oh, they're going to see this thing. Like, and there's going to be people like, well, I could do that. Or how did he get so lucky to get this?
Mm-hmm.
This series, what they don't see is that you started doing, you know, birthday parties when you were
from
a kid, and then you were touring 100 colleges a year, which is like cool, but also like a tedious job.
Yeah.
And throughout all of that process, you hit inevitable failures, roadblocks, and dead ends.
Mm-hmm.
Despite that, you're here with this backlog of like really great things, you know. Of course, we don't showcase all of those, the things that didn't work.
Sure.
How do you not lose inspiration and lose that drive to hit this thing when, you know, that's one out of 100?
Yeah.
And you had to go through the 99s to get there.
Yeah.
How do you what drives you to keep going at that goal when it's like the world sometimes seems to be like being like, nope.
You know, I feel like there's a, you have to be a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
I think just to believe, and you also have to really truly believe that you are special, that you are, like, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, whatever, like, that I am a great entertainer. Like, obviously, you know, you don't want to believe all the compliments and praise you hear from a random person after the show, but you should believe enough of it that when you're feeling down, you can be reminded that, yeah, I am really good at this. Like, there is something here, and just a little temporary roadblock doesn't mean that this isn't meant to be. Like, you need to believe that you can be, that you're worth being known by a large amount of people. So, which is also crazy, because where's the proof to believe when you're doing birthday parties that you could have your own TV show? Like, it's not there yet, but somewhere deep inside, and maybe it's like just the healthy part of ego, you know, and also without being a cocky, you know, pompous, like, yeah, I'm the best. Like, there's just like there's a yin yang of just being kind and humble, but also believing that you have something worth spreading. And that for me is what got me through kind of maybe the ebbs and flows. So, like, doing kids' birthday parties is my bread and butter for many years. When I first came to LA, I think it was maybe for 7-8 years, it was kind of just like the hustle. And I loved doing kids' birthday parties. I loved the business of it. I loved kind of really like just coming into a new market with all this enthusiasm, and I was this kid right out of college, so I kind of like had like a different branding, set it apart from the other LA magicians, and it was like really, really took off. And then but then I kind of like burnt myself out a little bit. I kind of I also got into like a group of friends that kind of played into my darker urges and partied too much and, you know, drank too much and, you know, kind of dabbled in drugs too much, and that like took me away from my intended path, you know, into this part where, and my business suffered. And then I, you know, just for a while, like, there were times where I would call my dad like to borrow money, I promise I'll pay you back, and he's like, you know, why don't you, like, literally like talking me into trying to get a real job, why don't you do this, why don't you try to get a job, you know, be a waiter for, you know, like all these things that my parents always had believed in me and believed that I could do it. Hearing them even hint at the fact that maybe it's time to like cave in, or maybe it's time to fall back, like, was a big wake up call for me.
So that inspired you rather than increased the doubt.
Well, it definitely turned the mirror on myself to realize that, like, hey, this isn't like, this wasn't the plan, you know. The plan wasn't to really be crushing it and then kind of get lazy and then really be barely getting by for a couple of years. The plan is to like go on to the next thing. So that's what, it just so happened that that's when I then kind of discovered the college market and managed to get in at kind of a perfect time where I didn't have to like have a showcase to show up. I just kind of went to a NACA with Tim and Rich at GP Entertainment, who were great, and just kind of like worked the booth and managed to transition from birthday parties to colleges, really at a time where I could have like retreated back to St. Louis, you know, and like, you know, kind of given up on that next step. So it was a nice wake up call. And and then for a while I was like doing half birthdays, half colleges, which was tough because you kind of got to book these colleges far out and feel, you know, the birthday parties also book far out. So, you know, you kind of have to give and take a little bit. But then the colleges became became the thing. And then I was back on track. But then trying to pursue the, you know, the L.A. kind of whatever it is we're out here doing. You know, like I wanted to parlay into hosting and, you know, and acting. And those were 99%. Failures, you know,
right.
Like just no, just not the right thing. And those really suck for a long time. But because I had like the magic that I had control over, I was able to not like take those rejections so personally. And a lot of people don't have that luxury. You know, if you're out here just as an actor, you know, you, this is your thing. And if you're getting rejected at least as much as I was, like, without something that you are also equally passionate about to cling to, I could see that being really devastating. So
yeah. The what resonates for me is those moments of not giving up on whatever it is. Like, oh, you know, I find that there's just tons of, and myself included, I'm like, well, I don't know. He's like, should I just go get a job? You know, it's like, and everyone I've ever talked to has that moment at some point. They're mm-hmm. like, I don't know. And then, but then it's like, it's always for me is like, well, I know how to get to where I got now.
Right.
Which if I would have told like my Penn State version,
Penn State, Chris,
hey, you're going to be out in LA first. That's enough.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you're going to have a place in LA.
Right.
But you're whatever that is, like, that's okay, great. I've already exceeded the thing. Like, yeah. I grew up in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
It was like some town that, you know, most people don't leave.
Yeah, just the, I mean, I remember when I was in high school, I was friends with Eric Buss from some magic competitions. He was a couple years older than me. And I would talk to him on the phone, and he'd be out in LA in his apartment. And I was like, what's the temperature there? He's like, dude, it's like 80 degrees. Oh my God. And you're just like chilling? Yeah, I'm just working on magic today. And it's Tuesday. Oh, this is like the best. Like,
yeah.
Just to be out, like, to be a grown up in the perfect place, it just seemed like the goal.
So there might be something in that of like, we oftentimes, most of us, like, are harder on ourselves than we
give
credit for.
We so quickly forget what would have been enough
for
us just like a year before, which is
crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, like, you just the idea of, okay, maybe I should like settle or do something else. Like, I don't even, like, I never even programmed myself to have a plan B or a fallback. So in terms of the not giving up, I think by not even, you know, putting the plan B stuff into my brain, like, I just didn't even know what that meant or what it would look like. So there was no choice but to not give up.
Great. That's what I was digging into. So it's like that, where they're like, if you just have that, and programming the mind like that is an interesting thing of like, well, if I don't have this other option, then I can't choose this other option.
Exactly.
Like really great to just,
it's
say,
really great.
This is it.
And that mixed with the, you know, if you're deranged enough to believe that you are better than what you're currently, you know, experiencing. You know, all of us entertainers, anyone who does what we do with no, you know, dependability of work and the fact that it's all out of our control, like, we're a little crazy in a great way, you know. But you have to be just that little crazy to think that it'll work. And so far, it has. I would knock on wood, but I don't want to mess up the recording. Yeah.
So and now you're here and you have this whole back catalog of great work that you've accomplished and created, and now you have the new Netflix series coming out soon or now, depending on when you people are listening. What is that? How soon do you feel after that? Like, that's like, for most people in entertainment, like, oh, that's a thing. Now it's like in 2018, you're like, oh, that's the ultimate thing that could possibly happen in my life, in my career.
Mm-hmm.
How soon does it become like, okay, that's something I did. Now,
well,
what do I do next?
Like, I've learned
to... Do you instantly
to
jump onto this thing where like, ah, now I gotta...
Well, I do. I do because, you know, it was a year of my life, like, full focus of the writing and the shooting and the editing. And then right when that's done, even when it's not out yet, you're kind of like... You know, people say, oh, go on vacation, chill out, relax, you know, you've been so stressed, relax. And I just don't know, I can do that for a day or two. I don't know what else to do. So you kind of, I get stir crazy and worry about what's next. I mean, I'm very excited for it to get out, and I have very high hopes that it will be, I'll get to do more of them and that people will like it. But I've learned since I've been in LA, like, I've had many opportunities or breaks that I thought, this is it. This is
right.
It's all going to change, and I'll get really stoked and so excited, and then it'll come out, or it won't come out, or people might see it, or they won't, and it wasn't that thing, you know. And I found that I gain nothing by like putting expectations of greatness on a project if I don't have control over who sees it or what. All I have control over is just to make it as good as it can be, and to know that it's now a part of my body of work. And so far, no one thing has like been the big game changer, the overnight success, whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm better just to, after I've done that thing that I've worked as hard as I could and made it as good as I can, let's think now what's next. What can I do to apply what I've just learned to a new thing, you know? And I find that just the mentality of creating a body of work, not overthinking or, you know, feeling like you failed because one thing wasn't what you hoped it would be, and also not feeling like you finally made it because one thing is going to be something great. I find just like a stoic confidence that was good. What's next seems to be the best mentality for me. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. I've talked about this several times before of the golden ticket kind of myth of people think, oh, if I get on this show, that's the golden ticket. And there is no golden ticket of, you know, that might have been a thing in, you know, in the 90s or something with late night television or something. And we're still stuck on that thing. And, you know, I tried really hard to get on, like, oh, I did a little like appearance on Ellen DeGeneres' show. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, well, that'll be a thing that that'll take me to. And then I remember, like, by the time it aired, like 2 days later or something, I was like back in Pennsylvania, like watching it by myself, and I was like, "Huh, it's over.
Where's the party? Yeah, why? Yeah,
that's it.
Uh huh. Now what?
Check my phone. Nope, nothing.
Yeah.
And then I've done, you know, it's handfuls of things that I'm like, oh, this is a thing, whatever it is, and I'm like, huh, no one cares. Get back to work, do another one. And that's a really, like, that seems depressing initially, but then I'm like, well, that's great.
That means that if you do something and you're like, boy, I blew it. It's kind of comforting knowing that, like, nobody
that's
cares.
Right.
People will forget about it so quick.
Show up tomorrow and do something else.
I've done things where I've felt like I've blown it, and other people have said, oh, dude, that was really a weak, performance. And luckily, like, the crappy stuff sinks to the bottom and no one sees it, and the good stuff stays to the top, and wherever along the line people discover you, you know, in the course of your career, then they can catch up on the good stuff, you know, which is nice.
And that's something that I heard someone talking about recently of like, well, there's like this thing of also like, oh, you got, everything has to be top notch because everyone's seeing everything. But then there's also this thing of put out everything, the good stuff will rise and the bad stuff people will forget about, and you keep moving on. And that's really, I think, the only way to make the good stuff.
You have
to,
between the two,
you know, like, don't put out all garbage.
Right.
But that's, we know that.
But don't be so picky that you only put out one piece of content a year, you know?
Right.
But yeah, it's there is no tried and true way to do it, but I think consistent and just build your fan base, build your body of work. Try to always do something better than the last thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's great. So we're about to wrap this up and kick over to the bonus version for Patreon people. So if you want to hear the conversation continue, go over to Patreon, check that out. And every guest is on the main podcast. This is the episode, and the bonus episode is only available to Patreon people. So we're going to kick over there. But before we do, we'd like to end the main episode with the memeable minute.
All right.
You'll have 1 minute to wrap up your thoughts on and give somebody a nice nugget of
What
we've discussed, or what you feel like is the most important, most valuable thing for some, maybe for someone who's wants to move to LA or wants to accomplish this thing, but then they're thinking about all the, they're afraid to put out that piece of content because they're waiting for that one piece of content at the end of the year that's going to be the thing that does it.
Right.
So a little, we'll kick into the memeable minute. You have 1 minute starting now.
Oh, man. So I would say, just to maybe recap the greatest hits, if you truly think that you are unique and special at what you do, you got to never forget, and you got to always just believe that you've got some little kernel of gold within you. And trust that and remember that when it's not going as well. And I think it's better to try and fail than to never try. So if you're like, oh man, if I go to LA, what am I going to, what about this? What about that? Or wherever, or go to New York or wherever, just go. I say, just go, because you will, you'll figure it out. You'll have a fight or flight survival instinct. You know, I'm sure we came to LA in very, any like economist or analyst would say, this is, you don't have any prospects lined up here. Yeah. Where are you going to work in a week, in another week? It's like, no, nothing. You'll figure it out. And I would much rather do that and just be like, man, I tried, than to be 70 and be like, man, what if? So there's that. And dude, whether you nail something or you blow it, never put any weight behind it. As hard as it is for me, I obsess about everything. But once you finish a thing, put it behind you, work on the next thing. I think as a entertainer and an artist, I feel like it's a healthier mindset, you know, as opposed to really obsessing over, you know, if you're a painter, just obsessing over that painting that you sold and you can't do anything about, versus painting something new. Paint a new thing, you know? Yeah. That's probably a minute, maybe 40 seconds.
Yeah, probably more.
Yeah. And then as a reminder to myself, I would say, because I'm sure us performers are neurotic and obsessive, is to relax and to get out and seek inspiration. We were talking about this on the sidewalk. Seek inspiration outside of your art form and figure out ways to kind of do things with magic, juggling, acrobatics, or whatever. Do things with your art form about ideas and concepts that have never been touched by that art form. And I think then you create original content and an original voice.
Great.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Hope that made sense.
You so much. We're kicking over to the bonus. So head over to Patreon and jump on.
Now we get to the good stuff.
The real. Okay. We're going over there now. See ya.
That's the show. Thank you again for listening. If you want to continue this conversation, you can head over to patreon.com/betweendreams. For about the price of a cup of coffee per month, you can hear bonus material from every guest as one episode every week. There'll be about four on average per month. You can hear all those bonus exclusive content, but it's only when you become a supporter on patreon.com/betweendreams. So thank you again for listening. Thank you very much to Justin for sharing such amazing stuff. And we will see you and hear you, and you will listen next time. That's it. Okay, goodbye.